This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Russia says Ukraine's NATO membership would have very negative consequences for European security as a key hurdle to Kiev's bid to join the alliance is lifted. Iran slams three European countries' plan to retain sanctions over its missile program, saying Tehran reserves the right to respond in kind. And no end in sight to Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. Occupation forces shoot another young man near the West Bank city of Ramallah. Hello and welcome to World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. First story takes us to Moscow, which warns that Ukraine's NATO membership would have very negative consequences for European security. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov's remarks came ahead of the Alliance summit in Lithuania this week. He said Kiev's accession is a threat to which Russia would respond firmly. Meanwhile, the membership action plan, which was part of Ukraine's requirement to join NATO, has been lifted. Still, NATO Secretary General Jan Stoltenberg made it clear that Kiev will not become a member while the war is still going on. NATO has already given full backing to Ukraine by providing weaponry worth billions of dollars since the war began in February of 2022. Russia has time and again cited NATO's eastward expansion as the reason for its military operation in Ukraine. West, mainly the United States, Germany, France, and the UK have pledged numerous aid packages worth hundreds of billions of dollars to Ukraine. Many have warned that sending cluster munitions to Ukraine would further complicate the situation. Now, the question that arises is whether the world is ready for yet another direct conflict between the United States and Russia and its subsequent global consequences.
Crossing a new threshold in the type of weaponry supplied to Kiev, the United States on Friday announced it will provide the internationally banned cluster munitions to Ukraine.
In this environment, Ukraine has been requesting cluster munitions in order to defend its own sovereign territory. The cluster munitions that we would provide have dud rates far below what Russia is doing, is providing, not higher than 2.5%.
Sullivan said Ukraine would not be using the munitions in a foreign land. He added that Kiev has provided assurances in writing that the weapons will be used carefully to minimize risks to civilian lives. U.S. President Joe Biden defended the decision, saying it was because the efforts to defend against Russia had run out of ammunition. The move drew an instant reaction from the United Nations.
The Secretary General supports the Convention on Cluster Munitions, which, as you know, was adopted 15 years ago. And he wants countries to abide by the terms of that convention. And so as a result, of course, he does not want there to be continued use of cluster munitions on the battlefield.
A number of key U.S. allies defied Washington's decision to supply cluster munitions to Kiev.
Well, the UK is signatory to a convention which prohibits the production or use of cluster munitions and discourages their use. We will continue to do our part to support Ukraine against Russia's illegal and unprovoked invasion.
Sunak made the comments in an address to reporters. Spain also followed suit, saying that certain weapons and bombs cannot be delivered under any circumstances. France reiterated its opposition to the use of the controversial weapon. Germany said the decision goes against the Convention of Cluster Munitions that bans such weapons on the battlefield. Neither the United States nor Ukraine is party to the pact. Russia strongly condemned the move. In a statement, Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova said it is an act of desperation and shows weakness against the backdrop of the failure of the much-touted Ukrainian counteroffensive. Zakharova added the decision showed the aggressive anti-Russian course taken by the U.S., which is aimed at prolonging the conflict in Ukraine as much as possible. Tehran also lambasted the move. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the U.S. decision to send cluster bombs to Ukraine shows Washington's determination to perpetuate and further complicate the war in Ukraine. Inside the U.S., congressional Democrats raised concerns over the move. Senators Barbara Lee and Tim Kaine said Washington's decision to set cluster bombs to Ukraine could inspire other countries to sidestep an international convention barring such munitions.
Washington's decision to send internationally banned cluster munitions to Kiev has met with backlash from key allies of the U.S. and created division among NATO members. Russia has also taken a jab at the U.S.'s decision, an act of desperation which signals its weakness.
Supplying Kiev with cluster munitions comes as the armaments are highly controversial weapons that typically release large number of smaller bomblets, which can kill indiscriminately over a wide area. Those that go undetonated potentially endanger civilians for years to come. Cluster munitions are banned by over 100 countries. The supply of such weapons bring Washington's total aid to Ukraine to more than $40 billion since the Ukraine war began in February 2022. In total, the United States and its allies have provided Ukraine with numerous military aid packages worth hundreds of billions of dollars. The military support for Ukraine includes the delivery of heavy and light military weapons and ammunition, as well as non-lethal material military aid. Those weapons are sent to Kiev regardless of the fact that Russia has time and again warned that such a trend would only prolong the conflict and cause more destruction on both sides. But Ukraine allies seem to be more concerned about Kiev's failure on the battlefield and have consequently kept pumping Kiev full of advanced weapons. Those weapons not only have failed to prevent the conflict from getting exacerbated, but instead they have led to even more escalation on both sides. With Ukraine's so-called counteroffensive now it's in second months, Kiev has announced gains during its attacks on Russian forces. Ukraine says a number of villages have been liberated thanks to its counteroffensive. Russia, in the meantime, has targeted positions belonging to Ukraine using missiles, causing death and destruction in several areas. All in all, by supplying Ukraine with the internationally banned cluster munitions, the United States is taking two huge risks. One is simply prolonging the war, as Russia has numerously reiterated. And two is possibly getting Washington involved in the conflict. And that's what many throughout the globe prefer not to picture, given its potential global catastrophic consequences.
And moving on to other news this hour, Tehran slams the joint statement by the UK, Germany, and France on retaining sanctions on all exports of military equipment by Iran over its missile program. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the move is unconstructive and Tehran reserves the right to respond in kind. Earlier, the three European countries said they will maintain the sanctions, allegedly based on the UN Security Council's resolution 2231. Now, the measures are due to expire in October based on the sunset provisions in the resolution. Elsewhere in his remarks, Kanani reiterated using all available means to secure national rights with regard to peaceful nuclear technology. He said indirect discussions are underway with parties to the 2015 nuclear deal. Meanwhile, Iran says Canada, Sweden, Ukraine, and Britain are pursuing their political objectives by referring an accidental downing of a Ukrainian plane to the International Court of Justice. In a statement, the foreign ministry accused the four Western countries of failing to make good on their own stated commitment to resolve the issue through diplomatic channels. Now, the ministry said Iran had formed an independent technical group right after the incident and took the necessary actions to investigate the tragic occurrence. As the statement added, Iran immediately issued visas to experts from Ukraine and Canada to visit the site of the accident and to also prepare. They also prepared a report with the cooperation of foreign experts. On Wednesday, Canada, Sweden, Ukraine, and Britain brought a legal case against Iran at the top UN court They accuse the Islamic Republic of failing to take the necessary measures to prevent the downing of the plane, which killed all 176 people on board in January of 2020. Well, journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas says the International Criminal Court is a biased and Eurocentric institution.
This is, first of all, part of a context of Iranophobia and really basically trying to checkmate Iran in some way or shape or form. Now, the other thing is, of course, the ICC is an important organization to analyze, the International Criminal Court as well, which I'll come on to. But first of all, if all of this is so heartfelt from these nations, then they ought really to open the book on the Iran Air Flight 655, which was a passenger flight, we all know, heading from Tehran to Dubai, that was shot down by two MR surface-to-air missiles that were fired by who? The USS Vincennes, a guided missile cruiser of the US Navy. Nobody was ever brought to book over that, and I think the Americans haven't even had the courtesy to apologize for the hundreds of lives that were lost there. So that deals with hypocrisy. The second issue is really who are they taking this complaint to? The International Criminal Court has already been highlighted by certainly the African nations as an institution which has a bias, has a Eurocentricism about it. Has a racist track record because in up to 2016 it only selected more or less 9 African nations for whatever actions, legal actions that they took part in.
Well, Israeli forces have killed yet another Palestinian in the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian man was shot dead near Deir Nathem in the Ramallah area. Regime troops opened fire on 33-year-old Bilal Qada over an alleged grenade attack on an Israeli settlement. The Ramallah area has been a flashpoint area over the past months amid stepped-up Israeli violence across the West Bank. The regime has killed nearly 200 Palestinians in shootings and raids in the region since the beginning of this year. One of the most high-profile was the deadly aerial and ground attacks on the Jenin refugee camp last week. It left 12 Palestinians dead. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, says the incident shows Palestinians are adhering to the resistance despite the Israeli crackdown.
It's a clear message that even if the Israelis continued their aggression and their crimes, but at the same time, Palestinians insist that they would always be adherent to resistance and that the struggle will continue until the Israeli occupation comes to an end. When it comes to the ensuring the safety of the Israeli settlers, Israeli Minister Ben-Gvir knows very well that what's important for the Israeli society to hear is that they make sure the most important thing is the safety and security of the settlers. There had been orders for the military establishment that all Israeli soldiers, they have the green light to use their weapons in order to shoot and kill Palestinians, even if they do not feel imminent threat from the Palestinians. It's the same thing when we speak about the settlers. Settlers these days are fully armed. They have weapons, even if we speak about the children from the settlers community. All of them have weapons. They know that they would not be dragged to the military courts, and they would not be held accountable for even killing Palestinians mistakenly.
Meanwhile, Israel's far-right minister, Itamar Ben-Gvir, has announced that the regime's forces will no longer seize guns from settlers who shoot Palestinians in the occupied territories. Ben-Gvir's announcement comes at a time when Palestinians have been experiencing brutal attacks by settlers and regime forces almost on a daily basis. The new decision is aimed at encouraging settlers to carry weapons and to use them against Palestinians in the wake of anti-Israeli operations. It marks a shift in Israel's policy on settlers' crimes. Previously, settlers' guns were confiscated if they shot at Palestinians. The new policy shift comes as the occupied territories have witnessed ramped-up violence against Palestinians since the formation of a new far-right coalition cabinet under Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Meanwhile, 9 years have passed since Israel's 50-day onslaught on the Gaza Strip, and still no justice for the victims. Israeli war criminals continue to roam free as Palestinians continue to suffer. Ashraf Shannon brings us more.
In July 2014, Israeli forces waged an all-out war against the Gaza Strip that lasted for 50 days. During the course of the onslaught, Israeli forces killed some 2,200 people, including hundreds of innocent women and children. A further 11,000 were wounded. According to human rights organizations, the Israeli attacks on Palestinians during the 2014 war were systematic and deliberate, with disproportionate and excessive force used against civilians. Rights groups demand that Israeli war criminals be brought to justice.
9 years ago, Israel waged an all-out war on Gaza and committed war crimes. Israel used the tactic of bombing buildings with civilians inside and also attacked United Nations shelters. We have documented the killings and injuring of Palestinian civilians and the mass destruction of civilian infrastructure. We call on international legal bodies, including the International Criminal Court, to investigate the Israeli crimes and to hold the perpetrators accountable.
The 2014 war also saw the bombardment of thousands of homes and the displacement of around 500,000 people. The Israeli regime has consistently failed to make any attempt to hold individuals at any level responsible for the war crimes and crimes against humanity.
I was injured and my 60-year-old son was killed. Three of my cousins were also killed. My family, along with 10 other families, were hiding in the basement when it was hit by an Israeli rocket.
During the 2014 war, the Israeli regime displayed callous indifference, launching attacks on family homes in the densely populated coastal strip. This is while the United States and other Western countries provided billions of dollars worth of military aid to the Israeli regime during and after the 2014 onslaught on Gaza.
The Israeli regime has shown zero accountability for the crimes perpetrated by its troops due to the protection it enjoys from the international community, especially from the United States. These actions encourage Israel to commit more crimes against the Palestinian people.
Despite Israel's grave violations of international law, Palestinians continue to suffer due to international apathy.
Experts say that the Israeli regime has committed acts that amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity in the Gaza Strip since 2008. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
And now to North Korea, which has warned of a decisive response should the U.S. military enter its economic zone again. Kim Il-sung, the powerful sister of the leader, Kim Jong-un, made this statement, the threat in a statement on Monday. Now, that after Pyongyang claimed a U.S. reconnaissance plane recently violated its airspace near the East Coast. The North also denounced what it called a move by Washington to introduce a nuclear-powered ballistic missile submarine to waters near the Korean Peninsula. Pyongyang says such actions create a situation that would bring a nuclear conflict closer to reality. Now, the North regards Washington's deployment of strategic nuclear assets to the Korean Peninsula as a blatant nuclear blackmail against North Korea and regional countries and a grave threat to peace. Well, South Koreans have taken to the streets of the capital Seoul to protest against Japan's plan to release contaminated water from the Fukushima nuclear plant into the Pacific Ocean. IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi has traveled to the South Korean capital to reassure officials and opposition there that the water release will not harm humans or the environment. That brings us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you all so much for staying with us.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Zionist regime has intensified its military operations in the occupied West Bank, killing dozens of Palestinians and wounding hundreds more in the past 2 years. The Zionist regime raids have targeted Palestinian towns, villages, refugee camps, and holy sites, sparking a wave of armed resistance from Palestinian factions. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye reported, Israeli forces have shot and killed a Palestinian man near the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah. The Palestinian Health Ministry said in a brief statement recently that a man with serious wounds in the chest arrived at the Istishari Arab Hospital from Umm Safa village north of Ramallah and was pronounced dead 30 minutes later. He was identified as Palestinian Abdul Jawad Saleh. A large presence of Zionist regime forces was spotted in Umm Safa earlier in the day. Residents of the village had gathered to join a rally against the establishment of a new settlement outpost near the southern entrance to the village last month. Protected by the Zionist regime army, Zionist settlers attacked the Palestinian protesters with sticks and stones, wounding some, according to the news outlet Arab 48. Muhammad Bahr, a member of Umm Safa's village council, told Wafa News Agency that the Zionist regime forces shot and killed Saleh while he was in the northern area of the village. Umm Safa, along with other villages near Ramallah and Ablus, has come under violent Zionist settler mob attacks in recent weeks that left at least one Palestinian killed. Palestinians hold weekly rallies in the West Bank to denounce settlements and occupation by the Zionist regime. Zionist regime troops and settlers often attack them to disperse their protest, leading to the wounding and killing of Palestinians. Nearly 700,000 settlers live in more than 250 settlements and outposts across the West Bank and East Al-Quds in violation of international law. Saleh's killing comes after Israeli regime troops raided Nablus recently and killed two Palestinians, Khairi Shahin and Hamza Muayyad Muhammad Maqbul. Recently, Zionist regime forces have killed 18 Palestinians in one of the most violent weeks in the West Bank in months. According to Middle East Eye Tally, 192 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli regime fire this year, including 33 children, at a rate of more than one fatality per day. At least 157 people died in the West Bank and East Al-Quds, while the remaining 36 were killed in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Palestinians have also killed 25 Israelis in the same period. In the meantime, Wafa News Agency reported the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates strongly denounced the Zionist regime's acquittal of a police officer responsible for the cold-blooded murder of a Palestinian autistic man in Al-Quds in May 2020 and said the International Criminal Court, ICC, should investigate this. The foreign ministry said in a statement, "There is no justice or access to justice under Israel's illegal occupation and apartheid regime. Israel, the occupying power, and its tainted judiciary system continue to sanction war crimes and crimes against humanity against an occupied people and provide absolute immunity to its occupying forces and officers." The foreign ministry rejected what it said was Israel's disgraceful whitewash of the deliberate killing of Iyad Al-Lagh, 32 years old, autistic man in the occupied East Al-Quds while he was on his way to a special needs school on May 30, 2020. It said, "Israel's broken judiciary system is central to its apartheid regime and colonial aspirations, settler, racist and violent, fueled by systematic discrimination and sustained by Jewish supremacy. The killing of Iyad was not an honest mistake. It was part of a pattern and a direct execution of Israel's criminal laws and declared policies. Kill Palestinians." The Zionist regime district court in the occupied Al-Quds recently acquitted the policeman who killed Halaq, claiming that he acted recklessly and that the killing was a tragic mistake, while claiming that the officer acted in self-defense even though the victim did not have any weapon on him. The Palestinian Foreign Ministry said Israel's willful failure to hold its occupying forces and officers accountable for their crimes is further evidence that the Zionist regime should itself be investigated. There is no justice for Palestinians in Israeli courts. It added, "The prosecutor of the ICC has a responsibility and undeniable obligation to investigate and pursue accountability for Iyad and countless other Palestinians who are victims of Israel's culture of impunity. The prosecutor must expedite his investigation in order to deter and prevent Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people." The ministry concluded its statement, "The warning signs are clear. Israeli officials' public calls for the killing of thousands of Palestinians, coupled with a tainted judiciary system sanctioning these killings and shielding occupying forces, officers, and settlers, international protection is necessary. The international community and the UN Secretary General must provide international protection for the Palestinian people without any delays and excuses. The international community is responsible for the lives and well-being of the Palestinian people. Immediate action, not empty words, is needed."
ocean of dua.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll adopt a thematic approach towards supplication, and we'll have a look at supplication from the point of view of different verses of the Holy Quran, and we'll also have a look at some parts of the transmitted supplications as well as the whispered prayers. So stay with us. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil fa. Brothers and sisters, in the previous episodes, we were discussing the reality of the status of the supplicants. We have counted up to six stages for the status of the supplicants. In the first stage, the supplicant is only looking for his own request and nothing else. Of course, he has resorted to the Almighty Allah, and this is what really needs to be grateful for. In the second stage, the supplicant is looking for the contentment of the Almighty Allah. In the third stage, the supplicant is aware of the fact that the Almighty Allah is totally aware of his state, so he knows that the Almighty Allah suffices him. In the fourth stage, which is the stage of the infallible imams of the prophets, the supplicant has no want or desire because he knows the secrets of the creation. In the fifth stage, the supplicant asks God only because of his faith. We had a look at some of the words of Lady Fatima and also other infallible imams. Now, the sixth stage is the position of an individual whose request, "I invoke you to let me get to you," has been accepted. So, you see, in the previous stage, we described the words of the infallibles, that they asked the Almighty Allah to be among the best ones. "وَجَعَلْنِي مِن صَفْوَتِكَ." "Oh Allah, make me among your choice." "مِنْكَ أَطْلُبُ الْوُصُولَ إِلَيْكَ." "Guide me to you, let me get to you." "أَنْتَ غَايَةُ مَطْلُوبِي وَمُنَى." "You are the end of my hopes and wishes." So these requests of the fifth stage, they are all totally accepted. And now the supplicant, the individual, is in the sixth stage. So his request is accepted and has reached such a servant has reached such a state in which nobody thinks to ask for such a position. In order to understand this more, in order to elaborate on that, we can refer to the words of Ziyara Jami'a. So, in this Ziyara, we read, فَبَلَغَ اللَّهُ بِكُمْ أَشْرَفَ مَحَلِّ الْمُكَرَّمِينَ وَأَعْلَى مَنَازِلِ الْمُقَرَّبِينَ. Allah has granted you the most honored positions, the highest rank of the closest ones to you. وَأَرْفَعَ دَرَجَاتِ الْمُرْسَلِينَ. The highest positions of the prophets. حَيْثُ لَا يَلْحَقُهُ لَاحِقُ وَلَا يَفُوقُهُ فَاهِقُ. The kind of station that no one reaches, no one exceeds, no one proceeds or ever thinks to get. وَلَا يَطْمَعُ فِي إِدْرَاكِهِ طَامِعُ. حَتَّى لَا يَبْقَى مَلَكٌ مُقَرَّبٌ. There is no angel. وَلَا نَبِيٌّ مُرْسَلٌ. There is no prophet. وَلَا صِدِّيقٌ وَلَا شَهِيدٌ. There is no truthful one, no martyr. وَلَا عَالِمٌ وَلَا جَاهِلٌ. There is no learned or unlearned man. إِلَّا عَرَّفَهُمْ جَلَالَةَ أَمْرِكُمْ. unless Allah has made them know your loftiness. And this is special to the infallible imams.
Why do we make supplication? And why do we call out to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? Is it because God is not aware of our needs? God is Al-Alim. He knows all of our needs. Is it because God needs convincing? God is known as Al-Jawad. He is the source of generosity. Then why am I making dua to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala? The dua is a journey of realizations. When a person goes to the ocean and he takes with him a bucket that can carry 4 liters of water, the ocean is infinite. In as much as your vessel is large, that is the amount of water that the ocean will give you. And therefore, our goal is to expand our capacity. Rumi has a very beautiful poem. He says, Har khujo mushkil javab onjo ravad. Wherever there is a problem, that is where the answer will come. Har khujo keshti ob onjo ravad. Wherever there is a vessel, that's where the water will come. Ob kamju tishnagi ovar bedas. Don't go seeking for water. Instead, create the thirst within you. Ta beju shad obaz bala vakas. So that the water may burst forth from above and from below you. Experience that realization that you need God, and the mercy of God will come towards you. Paradise, thank you Allah. Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. Feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Dear listeners, there is one point to be noticed regarding these different stages of supplication. The delicate point to be observed regarding the supplications of the infallible imams is the fact that they have left for the believers an ocean of knowledge from which each individual takes benefit according to his own capability. So these beloved ones have instructed us to take our wants and desires, either small or big, from our God. It is not to be asked why do the infallibles ask the Almighty Allah, because they are always aware of the secrets of this world and the other. No, it is actually having a look at this great ocean of knowledge, we understand that they have transmitted their knowledge to us, their lifestyles to us, even history to us through these supplications. The secret behind this issue is that these honorable ones have established a kind of school which instructs everybody. These scholars have opened up the doors of prosperity to everybody. So, in supplication, a special aptitude is not required. The educational school of supplication is different from other kinds of schools that everybody can take in it freely and everybody can benefit from it in accordance with his specific taste. No. In other words, the inclusive nature of knowledge of the Ahlul Bayt, this kind of knowledge of the infallible imams, makes their knowledge so pervasive that everybody can enjoy it anywhere in the world, and it is not specific for a location. It is in accordance with this expression, يَمَنْ دَنَا فِي عُلُوِّهِ يَمَنْ عَلَى فِي دُنُوِّهِ. O you who are near, though you are so high, and you are high even in your nearness. And this delicate issue can be found only in the school of supplication and not in other educational schools. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.ir. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parsetoday.ir/en. In the limelight.
In Britain, official government statistics shows that the cost of living crisis is having a negative impact on the ordinary life and mental health of Britain's population. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Daily Mail has covered this story and tells us more. Britons are cancelling holiday plans and literally tightening their belts by buying less food as the cost of living crisis continues to eat away at their comfort and security. A new opinion poll for Mail Online reveals the extent to which families are economising in the face of high inflation, interest rates and energy bills. More than half of Britons have been cutting back on food shopping as they struggle to make ends meet. Almost all those quizzed by Redfield and Wilton Strategies admitted being hit by surging prices, with 43% saying the impact had been significant. Grocery spending has been deliberately reduced by 55% of the British public, and two-thirds of those who have changed habits said they had switched to value brands, while 40% were simply buying less. Half of the public has also trimmed their outlay on leisure activities, eating out, and clothes in the past month. Additionally, 41% have ruled out taking a holiday either in the United Kingdom or abroad in the coming months. Some 60% of those say their decision is down to relentless pressure on finances. Meanwhile, even those still heading off admitted that they had chosen a cheaper destination and accommodation than usual, or are staying for less time. At the same time, there is widespread unhappiness at the high tax rate. But while calls have been loudest for cuts to inheritance tax, being ignored so far by the Treasury, it is income tax that is seen as the least fair by voters. It comes as inflation means that more and more people are being dragged into higher tax brackets which have not moved in tune. Recently, Mail Online revealed that Tory hopes of retaining power at the next general election rest on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak and Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt's hopes of having inflation and cutting mortgage costs before voters go to the polls. According to the figures compiled for Mail Online, the state of the stumbling economy is far and away the most important issue for voters ahead of an election expected next year. More than a third, or 35%, surveyed by Redfield and Wilton Strategies said it was the issue that would most define how they would cast their vote in the next general election. Tellingly, it was the most important issue across all age groups, with the highest figures among pensioners, a group containing a large number of Tory voters. It comes as mortgage lenders pull financial products from their shelves ahead of an expected further increase in interest rates from the Bank of England, designed to tackle inflation rates remaining stubbornly high. In April, the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, dropped to 8.9% from 10.1% the month before, dropping out of double figures for the first time in 8 months. But again, the fall was not as big as expected, with analysts having penciled in a number closer to 8%. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has vowed to halve the rate of inflation by the end of the year, as millions of Britons struggle with the cost of living crisis, high interest rates and the soaring cost of food. Sunak and Chancellor of the Exchequer Jeremy Hunt are refusing to bow to backbench demands for tax cuts in case it affects inflation. According to a survey carried out for this website by Redfield and Wilton Strategies, the next most serious issue on voters' minds were education and healthcare. While Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has made immigration another key focal point of Tory hopes for re-election, it is just the fourth most pressing issue for voters, with just 9% flagging it as a particular concern. London Evening Standard has also covered this story and tells us more. A new opinion poll showed almost half of young people living in the capital plan to leave within the next 10 years, with many blaming rising cost of living and property prices. Figures published from a YouGov opinion survey show that 47% of the capital's 18 to 24-year-olds intend to move out within the next decade. The survey found this is considerably higher than the 28% of all over 18s who think they will leave the capital in the same time frame. Of those who are considering a move from London, 56% cited the cost of living among other factors, with 55% basing their decision on high property prices. Other reasons included how busy it is, 29%, a lack of access to nature and countryside, 28%, the crime rate in London, 24%. Almost three-quarters of North London residents, or 69%, would leave the capital due to the cost of living concerns, followed by 59% of those in central London, and 53% of South London and West London residents, and 52% of those in East London considering a move amid rising costs. Polly Neat, the chief executive of housing charity Shelter, said the figures reflected how young people are one of the groups most affected by the housing crisis in Britain. Polly Neat said, being forced to hand over the bulk of their income to live in an overpriced and often shoddy rental is having a damaging impact on young adults' ability to put down roots and build a life. A spokesman for the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, said, there is always a natural flow of people, but it is clear that the worst cost of living crisis in decades continues to put huge pressure on Londoners. Sky News has also covered the same story and tells us more. A new opinion poll found the majority of the British public think that Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is doing a bad job in delivering on his five priorities. Almost half a year after the Prime Minister set out his five key aims, including halving inflation, growing the economy, cutting NHS waiting lists, reducing the national debt, and stopping small boat crossings, an Ipsos opinion survey found more than 50% of the British people think the government is doing a bad job on almost all of them. In a further blow to number 10 Downing Street, the opinion poll found the public tended to think that Rishi Sunak was doing a worse job on the areas that were most important to them. According to the opinion poll, the public's top priority was easing the cost of living crisis, with 59% listing it as important, followed by ensuring people can get NHS treatment more quickly, 54%, and reducing NHS waiting lists, 51%. But 60% of those who took part in the survey said the government was doing a bad job on easing the cost of living crisis, with only 18% saying it was doing a good job, and 62% thought it was not delivering on reducing NHS waiting times. On growing the economy, 39% listed as one of their priorities, 50% said the government was doing a bad job. The British public was more likely to think a Labour government would do a better job than the Tories on each of Rishi Sunak's priorities. Between a quarter and a third of people thought that Keir Starmer's Labour Party would do a good job on halving inflation, cutting NHS waiting lists and reducing the national debt. Some 21% said Labour would do a good job on stopping small boat crossings. The opinion poll found the public was more likely to prefer options that involved a Labour government than a Conservative one, with 39% saying a Labour majority would be a great outcome and 31% saying the same about a coalition between Labour and the Liberal Democrats. Only 27% said a Tory majority would be a good outcome, with 17% backing a Conservative Liberal Democrat coalition.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.